it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The car, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Open lines, 248-539-9797. Coming up this hour, the best of what Dan Campbell told the morning show. And another edition of Are You Going to Eat That? Nick out of Sally on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Nick.
Still there?
Yeah, all right. We got you. You came
sorry, guys.
Darn close to getting your call cut off, but go ahead.
Oh, sorry, man. So I haven't been listening, tuning in the last couple of days, so I might be just repeating a lot of crap, but I just can't believe there didn't seem to be any special plays for Gibbs. I mean, he's so dynamic. They just kept running him up the middle, and he got snuffed. I mean, he works better when he can make space on the outside, and they got away from the play action pass. I didn't watch all the game because I was distracted.
I don't know. I could disagree more. They tried to get Gibbs on the edge. They ran quick passes to the outside.
I was at a bar, so I agree. Couldn't pay close attention. That's the impression I had. It was just so vanilla. So predictable. And
I think they ended up having to do that. I think that they didn't have the time to throw the ball downfield like they would like to. So it was a lot of checkdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs caught 10 passes in the game, but it was only for 31 yards. He also ran a ball 9 times, but only for 19 yards. The Lions couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get the run game going, and they couldn't throw the ball downfield. They only had a handful, I think, of passes that went beyond 10 yards.
So you're saying that you think it's more the line than it is the play calling?
100%.
The offense weak line?
100%. Yes.
Okay, I feel a little better there.
Well, keep this in mind, anyway. And I think that this is something that, you know, everybody has to realize is that the best offensive coordinators call bad plays too. Like, there are offensive coordinators going to call between like 50 and 70 plays most games. They're going to get some wrong, okay? And you know, there's the whole, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? When I've taken those questions to coordinators, and Jared kind of mentioned it when we talked to him earlier, and we'll replay it at 1:30 if you missed it. When I brought up play calling, he said some of those plays were called. Some of the plays people wanted to see were called. They didn't get executed because Green Bay would be in the right defense to take a play away, which means you either get ever hear Jared go, kill, kill, kill. That's when he's changing the play because the defense that they can run the play, the deep shot that people want to see or the trick play people want to see, they can run it into the teeth of the defense, or they can change the play to something that is more likely to be successful. Additionally, there are times where, and he said it, we called some deep shots that weren't there. So I checked down. I mean, so, you know, what you see on the field isn't always exactly the way a play was called. You can get into play design and you can call it, you called it the wrong time. Like you could say, well, he called it the wrong time because he called it in a time where their defense was in a certain defense. But anyway, 248-539-9797. Jake is in Almont and next year on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Jake.
Hey, guys. How's it going? So I want to talk about that Lions Super Bowl window real quick. I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessarily like closing, like we're on the fringe of a downward spiral, but it's definitely a little concerning as like, I mean, last night, Caleb Williams definitely looked a lot better than he did last year with, like, some of the little stuff.
Did he?
Not taking dumb sacks, getting rid of the ball. And then this almost feels like, right now, it's kind of terrible to say, but I almost feel like we're in the 49ers situation where you got all this talent on your roster, but you're stuck, like, in this purgatory level where, like, you can't break through to make the Super Bowl, but you're good enough to make the playoffs and contend. And that's, like, my nightmare right now is that we're good enough to be a good team, make the playoffs and contend, but we're missing that final piece or little execution to kind of like drive it home to the Super Bowl. Like what, no matter what it is, whether it's the edge rushing or O-line, obviously the interior line's got to get a little better now, which I think it will. But I mean, it's a little bit concerning as like the quarterbacks in your division have a lot of room to grow, whereas Jared Goff's kind of hit his ceiling right now for the course of his career.
Yeah, but his ceiling is great. I mean, his ceiling is a guy who throws for 30 touchdown passes a year, 4,500 yards, and you know, gets you to the playoffs. That part's great. I think that you might be right that they need to add that extra player, but that's what the trade deadline is for, and hopefully that's why they've left all this cap space open, is that they can go out and make a deal for somebody, you know, in 8 weeks or whenever it has to happen. As far as Caleb Williams is concerned, I mean, you know the Bears lost, right?
Yeah. No, I know they lost,
and he didn't do much after that first drive. He was he started the game 10 of 10, looked great, and then
11 of 25.
I mean, the fall off was there, but the only thing that I get concerned about is, I mean, a lot of Ben Johnson's offense that we watched last year, a lot of it's timing and anticipation. And you could see that Ben Johnson misses Goff in that aspect, because there are a lot of throws that Caleb Williams could have made or missed or didn't see the window open, whereas Jared Goff's anticipation passing, in my opinion, is the best, if one of the, if not the best in the league.
Well, I'm not going to debate with you that was a great combination. Ben Johnson and Jared Goff was a great combination. The Bears' offense last night relied heavily on Caleb Williams' ability to scramble.
Yeah.
Like, that's not play design. That's not play calling. That is a quarterback that has a skill set that was that kept them above water. And, you know, we'll see. It's, again, I hate to overreact to any week one thing. So, you know, it could develop. I suspect it will.
But quarterback was more impressive last night?
JJ.
Clearly. But, I mean, we've had several calls about Caleb, several texts about Caleb.
Yeah.
And I get it, because it's Ben Johnson. You're going to have that kind of connection where we're worried, oh, we losing our offensive coordinator to another team becomes their head coach. Has that just made them a monster? And, you know, it's one game. No, I don't think it's made a monster. I think eventually the Bears are going to be a very good football team. But after last night, my takeaway was the Vikings are tough.
Yep.
The Vikings are real tough.
Vikings are still a factor.
Yeah. If that's what J.J. McCarthy in the fourth quarter was phenomenal. If that's what he's taking for the rest of the season, and I suspect it's not, he's going to have hiccups in the road as well. But if he plays more like that than what he did to start the game, then the Vikings aren't going to skip a beat with what they had last year with Sam Darnold, because now you've got a more talented quarterback with J.J. McCarthy. And if he's able to really absorb all this, then the Vikings are the team to look out for, not the Bears.
Now, I go back to, they're trying to compete now and into the future. Is this going to be a mistake? As he said, are they going to be in this purgatory where they can't get over the top? You can build and build and build. There's a reason why the favorite doesn't win the Super Bowl every year and why there's surprises. It's just get into that pool of teams that's got a legitimate shot, which doesn't mean just making the playoffs. There are teams that make the playoffs that really have no shot of winning at all. The Lions have been one of those teams the last 2 years. They've built a team that's been one of those teams that was good enough to win it all the last 2 years. They just haven't done it yet. They got to stay in this upper tier.
They
have to. And that did not look like an upper tier team on Sunday.
No, it did not. And, you know, I guess to piggyback off the caller's comment about Jared Goff, and we've already seen his ceiling. We have, but he can stay at that ceiling, provided, which is really good, by the way, provided the offensive line does their job. And after one game, that didn't happen. That's the problem, because Jared's got his shortcomings. He's not mobile at all. But what he is between the ears might be elite in the NFL. And I'll take that. But you need help, and that help has to come in the form of protecting him and opening up holes in the running game, because the running game, if they get the running game going, it opens everything up. You want to see him throw the ball down the field?
Yeah.
Watch them run for 150 yards, and then you'll see how many passes go downfield, because it's going to be crazy.
248-539-9797. We go to Matt next up on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how you guys doing today? Take you off speaker. Hold on. All right. Can't believe I'm saying this, but is this week two game against the Bears a must-win game heading into Baltimore for Monday Night Football after that, 0-3. Hard to make the playoffs, 0-3.
Yeah, I don't look at it that way, but because can they beat Baltimore? Sure, they can. If they get back to the way they played last year, sure, they can beat Baltimore. But They didn't look like it in week one. You don't want to lose to the Bears. You don't want to be 0-2.
All that momentum, all that talk, it's going to be hard to combat that on a national spotlight in Baltimore. That game's hard enough as it is without momentum going the other way. That's my only thought.
Yeah, I don't want them to be 0-2 going into Baltimore, but I don't see it as a must win this weekend. Do you see it as a must win?
No, but I think it's going to feel like that way for right now because it's the next game is part of it because every game feels you have to do it. But also, you know, there's extra added for the fans with the Ben Johnson factor coming in. You don't want to start 0-2 looking, you know, down the barrel of what's to come for the rest of the next 5 weeks or whatever. It's a really brutal schedule. It'd be nice to get that first win out of the way. Let's go. Take care of business. I think they will. I think the Lions will beat the Bears. But there are definitely concerns with this team for sure.
All of our football coverage presented by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game all season long. Week 2, Lions Bears, starting at just $30 for your first year. It's like $2.50 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started. It's Carson Anderson. The Jets offensive coordinator is Tanner Engstrad. The Lions picked John Morton over him, which I believe is a big mistake. The Jets offense look really good. I don't understand why they didn't bring Zeitler back, considering he signed a one-year contract with Tennessee for almost no money. He was very good here.
Well, it was like $10 million, I think, that he signed for, $9.5 million. That's not no money. And I don't think Zeitler was all that good last year for the Lions. Getting back to the Engstrad thing,
yeah,
he went to the Bears to work with Ben Johnson. If he stayed with the Lions to be promoted to the offensive coordinator, it's a lateral move because he was getting the offensive coordinator job with the Bears, right?
So he was with the Bears last year, but he wasn't the coordinator.
No, he was with the Lions last year, wasn't he? Wasn't he a quarterback's coach?
Well, and you said he went to the Bears.
He's with the Jets now, guys.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, you confused me when you said Bears. Yes, I was like, did he go to the Bears the year before? Because I thought he was.
No, sorry. Okay. So he went for
he took the offensive coordinator job. No, he wasn't the offensive coordinator here.
No, he got promoted.
Right, but what he's saying is that they should have hired him as the offensive coordinator of the Lions. So he has his choice. Does he want to stay with the Lions or does he want to go with Aaron Glenn?
Correct. If he was offered the
job.
Yes,
if he was offered, yes. Yeah.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think he was ever offered the job, though, with the Lions.
A lot of concern coming out of the opener. Understandably so. The question becomes, is it because they're doomed or can they get better? Can they get better moving forward? There is a lot of evidence that I think the people that are running this team are pretty sharp. But we'll see. We'll see if they can get it done. Gator, you ready to hear the best of what Dan Campbell told the morning show?
I am.
All right. So big concern people have is the pass rush. It wasn't exactly, it didn't impact the game, didn't impact Jordan Love, didn't get him off his mark, didn't give him very many pressures, barely touched him. So where will the pass rush come from with Hutch getting double teamed a lot? Here's what Dan Campbell told our morning show. So I was actually pretty damn surprised at the secondary. I thought they'd be better than they were. And I'm not thrilled about a lot that went down, but that was something I thought had a chance to be a strength. And I didn't think they stood out as special really in any way.
No, I don't think they did either. In fact, I mean, the things that stand out are the mistakes. They had the deep pass that that was completed like 40 yards on that play. And like, how did that happen? How does a guy get that open? There were penalties that were taken, too many penalties that were taken. And then you've got the play that Branch has the interception, but it's called back because of defensive holding. It's just too many errors, but it's stuff that's clean that you can clean up, though. I'm encouraged by that. Terrion Arnold coming out of the game with a groin injury, though they don't think it's anything serious. We don't know if he's going to miss the game on Sunday or not. I always worry about groin injuries and hamstrings and quads because those are things that can linger. You don't want those to linger. I don't know what the best route to take is with that. Do you rest him as much as you can to get him 100%, or do you play him and he plays through it? I don't know, but it's that's concerning because he's a guy that's counted on. We were really hoping to see him take that big leap from year one to year two.
All right.
He still can.
More here from Dan Campbell. You heard him say guys have one-on-ones. We got to win them. Do you have the guys that can win those one-on-ones? Here is what Dan Campbell said. So again, who is in charge here? New defense coordinator, new D-line coach. It's fair to wonder if they can, get things done. Last year, Aaron Glenn took a defense of second stringers and guys off the street, and they did enough to go 15-2. The more you think about that, the more it just comes across to me as completely remarkable. And so it's not to say that they can't do it with this group, which is healthier than they were at the end of last year, but they certainly didn't do it in week one.
No, but I like what he had to say, but you can get pressure it's not just dependent on the edge rushers getting home. You can get pressure up the middle and you can push that pocket back into the quarterback and see if he then, goes outside and gets eaten up by the pass rushers there. But Tyleek Williams and DJ Reader are a big part of this defense. And I think they did a real nice job as a whole in stopping the run and plugging things up the middle. And they'll eventually get some pressure too. I think that's one of the reasons they like Tyleek Williams is because he is a guy that can get some pressure. That's what Ali McNeil did so well and was turning into this great player before our eyes. He got better every year and unfortunately had the injury last year and you're hoping that he comes back sooner than later, but it seems like it's going to be later. But that's the type of player that they need. They need desperately to get that pressure up the middle if they're not going to get it from the edge rusher.
I feel like this is a soundbite that most people are talking about when asked.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, what is most correctable going into the next game? What are your priorities? What needs to get better? Here's Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy about that is I don't know how you can be like so bad with the fundamentals. Like if it truly is fundamentals, how did they get so bad, or how did they appear to be so bad on Sunday? Like I don't get that. You work on that stuff pretty much year round. Stances and hand placement and first step.
Splits and all that, yeah.
Yeah. How can it be a high priority going into I don't get it, but I also don't think Dan Campbell's lying.
No, I don't think he is
either.
And I
don't think they were lazy in the off season.
No, and I think part of the fundamentals is also just knowing what your assignment is. You know, that's something that doesn't show up as, hey, here's take a snapshot from, you know, press level and take a look at how you're lined up. It has nothing to do with.
That's fair, because you know what goes out the window when you're out of position is if you had a wrong read or took a wrong step, your fundamentals go out. Like, I'll give you an example. I remember talking to a coach once in the middle of a season where there was a lot of criticism of the team's ability to tackle. He said, there's nothing wrong with our tackling. I said, it doesn't look that way. And he said, we need to get guys in the right place. One of the reasons why the tackling looks so bad is because people are reaching with their arms because they're not where they're supposed to right. be. Bad so instead angle. Of instead of being where they're supposed to be, like filling the gap, they are, you know, taking on a blocker and now they're trying to tackle while getting blocked, or they're out of position and they're diving in somebody. And so the tackling isn't the issue. It's where we are on the field that's the issue that makes it look like it's bad tackling. So, I mean, I guess that makes some sense. All right. What do they emphasize to get the run game going? And should you have played the young guards in particular more during the preseason? Two more questions that the morning show had for Dan Campbell. Hear what he had to say. Also coming up later this hour, another edition of Are You Gonna Eat That? It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1. Doug Karsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Sun's out and shining here in Detroit. The sun did indeed come up yesterday and today, following Sunday's Lions loss. And look, it was ugly. It was absolutely ugly. Dan Campbell joined the morning show, asked some very pointed questions about, you know, how this thing gets better. What do you do to emphasize, what do you need to emphasize to get the run game going was one of the questions, because they did not run the ball effectively at all. Here's what Dan Campbell had to say. So Minnesota last night averages 4.6 yards per carry against the Bears. The one running back, Jordan Mason, was way more effective than Aaron Jones. Jordan Mason was over, it was at 4.5 yards a carry, which is pretty damn good. Aaron Jones struggled. Those numbers, those totals were helped by J.J. McCarthy's two runs of 14 and 11 yards. I thought it was interesting when he said that everyone is mad about it, because that strikes me that there have been some conversations about the run game. That strikes me that they're inside that building in team meetings. There's been some venting about the run game. I mean, I would imagine that is something that has to and will get better next week.
There's no question. The offense is predicated on being able to run the football, because if you're able to run the football, it opens up everything else. Yes, they have talented wide receivers without question, but everything's about the offensive line. And what makes Jared Goff, it's not the one thing, but what he does really well, play action passing. Mm-hmm. He's outstanding at it, but you can't, you know, have success with that if you're not able to run the ball in the first place to keep other teams honest.
All right, one more here from Dan Campbell. Should you have played the young guards in the preseason? Okay, there's, look at the struggles they're having up front. Makes you wonder, is this something he will reevaluate the philosophy? We found it really interesting, if you missed it yesterday, that the top the bottom three offensive outputs for 60 minutes of football were game one, game two, and game three last year, 20, 16, and 20 points. After week three, they really got the offense humming and ended up being the top scoring offense in the NFL. So you start the next season and the offense puts up 13 in the opener. Okay, there's a pattern here, perhaps developing. But anyway, as far as whether or not they should have played specifically the young guards, here's what Dan Campbell had to say.
I think that was kind of a surprising answer.
I was surprised, I think, and I love it.
I think people are kind of like, whoa, he actually said that. But, I mean, initially when he answers the question, he said, do you mean starters? As if to say, you want us to play the starters in the preseason?
The part that you didn't hear. Yeah.
And then they clarified, well, no, the rookies. And he said, okay. And then specifically with Mahogany in there too. I think it's refreshing to hear that. And it's something that I agree with. When you have rookies, I think rookies need to play. As far as the start is concerned, you don't have to worry about that, but these rookies happen to, well, I say I include Mahogany as a rookie, and he's not, but these are guys that have no experience or very little experience in starting. So, yes, I've always been an advocate of that when it comes to rookie players, that they should play some, and they did play some. But he's not admitting many. They should play more. They should have played more.
Well, maybe. He's admitting that they're thinking about it, yeah.
Tyleek Williams, who was another one on the other side of the ball. He needs to get reps, right?
Did they exactly have a ton of rookies that were breaking in last year? Because they got off to a slow start offensively last year, too.
They had nothing offensively rookie-wise. I mean, they had Sione Vaki, who got plenty of play in the preseason. And on defense, it was Terrion Arnold, and they had Ennis Rakestraw, who was basically hurt right away, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't see a whole lot of it on the defensive side.
Well, if that's the case, then I'm not sure that playing the rookies more. I mean, I guess it would have helped this year potentially with those two. But I like that he's looking in the mirror. Yeah. Most teams don't play their starters for much more than three or four series in the preseason. If three or four series of preseason football really going to take a football team 3 weeks to get it up and running? I would argue no.
Well, success leaves you clues, Doug. Just a call we got yesterday. To that point was, Andy Reid does play starters for a little bit in the preseason. Every coach does it differently. I'd have to look back and see if Nick Sirianni, how did he handle things with his Super Bowl team? Did Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley play in the preseason? I don't know. I'd have to look back and see that. But there were a number of teams that didn't play their starters, and the Lions are one of them. It's just a philosophy you go through. But with rookies, I think it is a different thing altogether, depending on what position that rookie is going to play. In some ways, like if you've got a rookie quarterback, I imagine in some ways you want to see that guy play. And then there's probably part of you that says, well, I don't want to show any film whatsoever on my rookie who's going to start the season at quarterback. But again, that's a different position, and we haven't had to see that here with the Lions.
Let's go to your phone calls, Russ and Tecumseh. Hi, Russ.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I heard the interview with Jared Goff this morning, and he sounds like a really nice guy, very, very educated, soft-spoken. But when he gets into trouble back there, he don't know what to do. He don't know if he either throws an interception or throws it way, way far away or gets sacked. And I said it from the day he got here. Detroit will never win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. Sorry to say that, but he just doesn't have the killer instinct that this new breed of quarterbacks that are coming into the league.
What's the new breed got? Like what?
They got legs, baby. They got legs. They got feet. They got knowledge. They know how they can run. I mean, when you're need nine and you throw a 6-yard pass, It's SOL. That's SOL. Same old Lions. Yeah. Need nine, throw a six.
How'd they end up with the top scoring offense in the NFL last year?
Huh?
How, with Jared Goff at quarterback, did they end up with the top scoring offense in the NFL?
Jamar Gibbs, J-Mo, Laporta. That's how they did.
So he got the ball to their weapons.
He got the ball to their weapons. Yes, he did.
So he did the job he's supposed to do. Right?
Okay. Look,
so that's guy that values the mobile quarterback.
If you are of the if you think that the number one skill set that a quarterback needs to be successful in the NFL in 2025 is mobility, okay, then you will not be a Jared Goff fan. If you think that it is a requirement to win the Super Bowl, then you will not be a Jared Goff fan. I don't think either of those things are true. There are so many different ways you can win. And Jared Goff, the skill set that he has that most mimics what I think is the greatest quarterback ever to play the game in the NFL. Most. He's not Tom Brady. Let me be clear. But Tom Brady and Jared Goff process information quickly and act upon it quickly. I think, and that's not to say, but I think that is the strength, was the biggest strength of Tom Brady, and I think it's the biggest strength of Jared Goff. Brady's the GOAT. So, but what Goff does doesn't appeal to Russ.
All right. Well, yep. Then he'll miss out. Jared Goff's thrown for more yards and more touchdown passes in the last 3 years leading up to this season than any quarterback in football. That includes Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Now, is he mobile? Oh, no, he's not. He's not, but that's why you have all those players around him to make plays, because he knows where the ball has to go and he gets it there on time. He didn't on Sunday. I don't think he had time to get the ball to players on time. There was a lot of checkdowns.
Okay, yeah. It was a mess.
It was a mess, and he was 31-39, and a lot of checkdowns.
Yeah, a lot of checkdowns.
And he did throw the interception.
I mean, I guess you just take this call until they win it all. And if they never do, you can go. It's so easy to blame one person. Like, I probably blame Matthew Stafford, who wasn't mobile and won a Super Bowl a couple years ago, right? I mean, you know, if you think mobility is it, and this happens a lot in sports talk and analysis, there's one thing that prevents you from doing it, and you just focus on the one thing, and I'm like, well.
And then you watch the game last night, but you see two quarterbacks that are clearly mobile. They're both in their second year in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, J.J. McCarthy finally got a chance to play because he missed all of last year, but I get it.
It's also, by the way, it's also a very safe position to take. They'll never win a Super Bowl with this guy. Well, and the reason it's safe is because you're basically saying, I'll take the field every year.
Now, I'll say this, though. I love Jared Goff, I think he can absolutely win a Super Bowl with the Detroit Lions. But he might be a little bit of a dinosaur. How many quarterbacks in the National Football League don't have that skill set of being able to maneuver through the pocket and make plays with their feet?
That's a good question. I mean,
I don't think there are.
I'd have to go back, and you'd have to go through team by team. But it's the mobile quarterback is a bigger factor now than it's ever been before. But you have to build offenses differently.
Yeah,
if you don't have a mobile quarterback.
And again, I think they can win with him. But yep. I'm just saying, you
there
start
are more
looking
and more
at,
mobile
at
the, quarterbacks yeah. than there've ever been before. Yes. Goff did go to a Super Bowl. A mobile Jared Goff did go. A mobile Matt Stafford won one.
There might be 8 to 10 quarterbacks in the NFL that you would label as not mobile quarterbacks.
They might all be more mobile than Goff.
Yeah, Goff might be the most immobile quarterback in the NFL. But out of those quarterbacks that aren't all that mobile, boy, there's a lot of guys that have played for Super Bowls and won Super Bowls.
Yep.
Goff has played for a Super Bowl. Stafford's won one. Joe Flacco's won it. Aaron Rodgers has won it. You know, just breezing through it.
And again, you could say all these guys are more mobile than Goff, but whatever. I'm not. He's got a criteria. It doesn't fit what the Lions have. He doesn't think they have a chance. Okay.
It's a skill set that has certainly changed. I don't think he's, like I, when I said, he might be a dinosaur. He might be one of the last of these guys that you draft. And Michael Penix might be that now with the Falcons. Drafting quarterbacks, I mean, everything's changed in college. Things have changed in high school. You don't see the pure pocket passer as much as you used to.
Let's go to Zach in Ann Arbor. You're on 97.1. Hi, Zach.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Good. You know, I think from listening this morning and over the last few days, the thing that's been most disappointing is hearing how soft our fans are. listen, there's a dose of reality that I think we all had to take on Sunday, which is we might not be where we were. clearly. But I think one thing that is very disappointing is this idea that, you know, someone comes on and says that we can't win with Goff. What did Goff do wrong? 31 out of 39, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, a lot of check down, but he was also dealing with a non-existent front line. It wasn't there. O-line wasn't there.
They had a rough game. There's no question they had a rough game.
It was a terrible game. And I think that's the other thing is we don't have to live in these, like, in such a dichotomy of like, they're perfect, they're the worst. They had a bad game.
Don't you understand how this works anymore, Zach? Don't you understand that there are two things, they're perfect or they are the worst, and there is no subtlety, there's no nuance, there's nothing in between, Zach. You know who's a dinosaur? You know who's dinosaurs? Goff isn't the only dinosaur. I think we're a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Gator, are we a dinosaur? Because we don't think that everything is perfect or everything is terrible at all times?
Yes. I think another way, here's a game that's going to be interesting, and it's the Thursday night game. The Packers are hosting the Commanders, all right? So the Packers' defense just destroyed the Lions' offensive line, right? And they got to Jared Goff. They sacked him four times. How is that Packers' defense going to corral Jaden Daniels? You know, now that people get, I bet you this is going to be billed as this could be an NFC Championship game matchup here, the Packers and Commanders. I mean, that's what I want to see. Week one to week two, are the Packers this formidable or not? And are the Commanders? I mean, they got two really good teams going at it. It's a different type of quarterback altogether that Green Bay is going to have to face.
I'll say this. Micah Parsons doesn't do well with mobile quarterbacks. He just historically has.
I don't know. Michael Parsons is outstanding. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to nitpick on, you know,
but
games played in dome stadiums on alternate Thursday nights and losing. I don't. Who cares?
I mean, Goff has his limitations, but again, not everything is perfect. When he's put in the right situation, and he's been put in the right situation here, they built it a certain way. Now, did that foundation spring a leak when Ragnow retired? It might have. It might have sprung a huge leak that they got to figure out how to fill. And it might not be with this configuration up front. But I would suspect that Mahogany and Ratledge in particular have a chance to get much better as this year goes on. And if they need to shuffle guys around, then they can shuffle guys around and come up with a better combination. There's one player that's lurking that intrigues me quite a bit. And that's whether or not Giovanni Manu can play guard. And if he can, and maybe you shuffle Ratledge to center. They put some faith in Manu when they drafted him. Mm-hmm. They kept him off, you know, kept him from being exposed to waivers all of last year by having him as a healthy scratch all season long.
They traded up to get him.
Yep. And we saw this fail pretty bad with Broderick Martin. It didn't work under similar circumstances on the D-line where they traded up to get a guy that everyone's like, who? And now they did it with Manu. And so just because it didn't work with Martin doesn't mean it's not going to work with Manu. But I'm intrigued by him. Sean in Farmington's next. Hello, Sean.
What's up, boys? How you doing?
Okay, Sean.
Good, good. Just a couple of points.
in the earlier call, somebody, you guys were talking about not having enough time. Interesting enough, Jared Goff, according to, you know, a stat I saw on X, was that he had the third longest time to sit in the pocket and make a throw. I think that
tell me who reported that?
I can't recall who it was, but it was on there, and it said he had the it went Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, and then it went Jared Goff. Now, I think for sure our interior line needs the, you know, the reps to get themselves established and get themselves figured out. But ultimately, like, no doubt about it, it all comes down to Goff. I love the guy, but, like, he really needs to put the team on his back. Sometimes, yeah, the run won't – it's not going to be there. You know, the interior line and the outside line of the Packers showed that they're pretty dominant.
I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Jared Goff was indeed third in time to throw in the NFL in 2024. Are you sure you didn't see a stat for last year?
Maybe it was. That's just what I had noticed after the game, and that's what was kind of like disappointing to hear.
I guess if you could find it, I'd like to see if it was reported for this year. I would find it hard to believe, but he was third in the NFL last year, which leads me to believe that it's possible you saw something posted about last year. Do you think it's likely he had the third most time to throw?
In the game on Sunday?
Yeah.
No.
No.
No. Not by my eyes. No.
248-539-9797. Isaac and Royal Oak. Hello, Isaac.
There is zero chance he had the third most time. I mean, I watched the game, right? He was running for his life. It's one game. They won 15 games last year. That guy that called earlier is just a negative Nancy. He didn't have a chance to call in all last year. That's the same guy that they're going to win the Super Bowl, and he's going to tell you that they got to get tougher on the blue line, Gator. Like, it doesn't matter what happens. He's always going to say Goff needs to be able to run.
Yep.
And at that, like, it did not look good Sunday. And I thought the defense held up well, but which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, did we struggle offensively because the offensive line just had a bad day? Or was it the play calling? Because the offense did not look good. That was not what we had last year. Besides the offensive line, the positions are basically the same, right? So I think I'm going to choose to be positive. I think after they get more snaps, more live fire, the offensive line is going to play better. I hope that's one of the worst games they have the entire season. I still think we are making the playoffs and winning the division. And I refuse to believe that Ben Johnson was the reason we went 15-2 last year. I don't think that Morton is going to be as good. Maybe he will. But what does give me some peace of mind is Dan Campbell has shown us he's not a square peg, round hole guy. If it's not working, we're moving on. You know what I mean? So if that means the offensive line gets shuffled or Morton's no longer there, they don't stick around with bad decisions for too long. And I think that's a lot different than what we've had in the past. So,
well, I do agree with that. And there's you have to be able to pull the trigger. Dan Campbell's pulled the trigger. And if he deems it necessary, he will do it.
I don't think the problems on Sunday were the result of play calling from the offensive coordinator at all. I think the problem were a result of missed assignments and guys in the offensive line and blocking schemes not knowing what that assignment was or thinking it was one thing and it was clearly another. That's what I think the problems were on Sunday.
97-1, the ticket.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.